This is Food First Michigan on 760 WJR. Sponsored by the Food Bank Council of Michigan, creating a food secure state, and by Farm Bureau Insurance of Michigan. Now here are your hosts, Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson.
Welcome everyone, and thanks for listening. Hunger impacts every community in the United States. Yet Native Americans experience the highest rate of food insecurity. The Native Tribal Landscape Assessment provides a comprehensive overview of how Feeding America and the food banks in this network are partnering with Native and tribal nations, Native and tribal programs, and organizations located on Native and tribal lands to improve food security and food sovereignty. With it, Feeding America and its network are better positioned to support more consistent, equitable access to fresh, healthy, and culturally preferred foods across the Native and tribal nations and their communities. The landscape assessment was informed by interviews with 42 food banks, conversations with partners and community members in 12 Native and tribal communities, and extensive secondary research. The words I just shared are the opening statement of the landscape assessment study commissioned by Feeding America regarding the state of food insecurity in the Native and tribal lands of America. Mark Ford, the director of the Native and Tribal Partnerships for Feeding America, our national food bank, is our guest. Mark has a gentle spirit, a keen mind, and a passion for standing in the gap for our Native and tribal families that are struggling under the toxic stress of a food insecure lifestyle. Mark will share with us the landscape assessment that helps define reality. What are we doing about the challenge, and what can we do in the future? He is Mark Ford, and he is our guest today on this edition of Food First Michigan. Welcome back, everyone. As promised, Mark Ford is in our WJR studio, but let me begin by saying good morning to my featured co-host, Jerry Brisson. Jerry, great to see you.
Always a pleasure, Doctor. Always a pleasure. And you know, I like to say how excited I am when we have guests. And it's true. I do say it often. But it's true. Yeah. It's true. I mean, we had a chance to chat before getting on the show today. And I am just so eager to hear what Mark has to say. I think it's going to be a great learning moment, and also a moment to come alongside of someone who's really doing remarkable things. So, Mark, thank you for being here.
You're quite welcome, Dr. Phil, Jerry. It's an honor to be with you all, and looking forward to this time together and sharing a little bit about what Feeding America and our food banks are doing to partner with tribes and what more can be done.
Awesome. Well, Mark, let's start. You're the director of Native and Tribal Partnerships for Feeding America, our national food bank. So tell us a little bit about your journey of how you ended in this position right now, which we're so thankful you're in, and how you came to be here. And, you know, I'll just caution you that this is only like an hour long show. So, but we want to hear your story.
Thank you so much. Yes. So let me greet you officially. Dagota Chi Mark Ford Gonse. I just greeted you in my ancestral Apache language. I am of Native American descent, Chiricahua, Jicarilla, Apache, as well as some heritage with a couple of the Pueblo tribes of Santo Domingo and Taos. I belong to one of those families where our government programs about assimilation of Native Americans into Western society worked. So my great-grandparents on both sides of my family left their communities to look for a better life, looking for job opportunities and being able to be more self-sufficient. The Chiricahua Apaches are the tribe everyone is familiar with, Geronimo. Mm. He was probably the most brilliant warrior and one of the only few leaders, Native leaders, who was able to outmaneuver our own military. And so when Geronimo surrendered with his band, our government didn't want the Chiricahuas to have another future Geronimo. So what they did is took all the Chiricahuas and put them in other reservations to be assimilated into those tribes. And some tribes welcomed them and upheld their culture, and other places, they didn't feel so welcome. And with my family, they didn't feel that way. So they left the reservations and embraced Western society. So I did not grow up, you know, with the culture, the language, the traditions, and had to kind of learn those as a young adult. So I grew up, my father was in the Navy, so we moved around quite a bit. Oh. And I have four brothers and one sister, originally from Colorado, Southern Colorado. And grew up with food insecurity ourselves. A lot of times when my dad was overseas during the Vietnam War, sometimes those paychecks didn't come through on time and we were on commodities. We would have to tighten the belt a little bit. And I know there were days that my mom did not go with eating, so us kids would have something to eat. So food insecurity is something that is a personal experience in my own life. But I started my career as a young man as a Catholic priest. Huh. And it was interesting, when I was in the seminary, there was another young man, one of my classmates, who was also Native American, who had the same experience that I did, where his family from Oklahoma left the reservation to become Westernized. So both of us were kind of in this discovery phase of learning about our heritage and our cultures. And so we ended up joining the, we were in the seminary in Denver together at the Theological Seminary. And there is a Native American Indian center there. Most cities have an Indian urban center that provides support, social services, cultural experiences. And we ended up joining that, and kind of like we're adopted by some of the elders, and, you know, we learned some of the traditions. We also joined the Kateri movement, which is Kateri Tekakwitha is a Native American saint, the only one in the United States. And back in those days, this was in the early 80s, we were in the process of trying to have her become a saint. So there was a group of Native American Catholics, including priests, seminarians, sisters, and religious, who would come together every year to tell stories about Kateri and to advance the movement towards her sainthood. So we got very involved with that movement, and so it was a kind of a journey of self-discovery of my heritage and my culture and my background, and it's been a wonderful journey. And since then, my family has come to embrace that as well. I've worked with some medicine men and some elders who have taught us some sacred ceremonies that have just kind of it's like I was an orphan. And so even my parents and my grandparents were kind of orphans from their communities being cut off. And we hear many times of stories of Native Americans who were adopted by white families or were assimilated through boarding school experiences, and them, you know, looking for that journey of reconnecting with their communities and with their culture. So it's been that experience for me. So I began my career as a Catholic priest and did that for 16 years. I spent 7 years working on the Navajo and Hopi reservations out in Arizona. And it was a great honor and privilege to be able to work with those communities. And then when I was living in New Orleans, when Hurricane Katrina hit, I was a priest working at two different parishes. One of the parishes had storm damage, and it was slow to come back. The other parish didn't have damage, but the neighborhood didn't come back for a while. It's back now. So here I was with a bunch of other priests trying to figure out, okay, you know, what do we do? What do we do? Our congregations are slowly coming back. Our churches are rebuilding. How do we connect? And during that time, it was a time for me to reflect on my future. Because I realized that I was kind of burning out. I wasn't taking care of myself spiritually, not taking vacations and stuff. So I decided to take a leave of absence from the priesthood. And at that time, I was in New Orleans, and the governor of Louisiana was Kathleen Blanco, was her name. Kathleen Blanco was the first and only woman governor in Louisiana. And she had heard about my ministry. I started or co-founded the ministry in New Orleans for children with disabilities and their families to be more involved in the church and be able to participate more. And So I was offered a position to work in the governor's office of disability affairs and helped in the recovery efforts, helping relaunch programs and services for people with disabilities. And it was a great experience. She did not run for office. And so a new governor came on board. Bobby Jindal was his name. And his chief of staff was going around finding, you know, who was working under Governor Blanco and what were their duties. So she came into the office and looked at my office and saw there were a lot of Native American art. And are you Native American? I said, yes. And she goes, really? Give me your resume. So a week later, they called me and the governor wants you to be in charge of the governor's office of Indian Affairs. So being the governor's representative to the tribes in Louisiana. And so I had the honor of serving in that administration in that capacity. Well, two more hurricanes hit, Hurricanes Gustav and Ike, that really impacted a lot of the tribes, especially down in the bayous in the southern part of Louisiana. So I spent a lot of time working with those tribes in recovery efforts and then looking how we could mitigate future disasters and help the tribes to be more resilient. So I did that until they eliminated my position. And so I ended up moving to South Dakota to visit my brother up there. Well, he lives up in South Dakota in the Black Hills. And he's like, you know, there's a lot of tribes up here. I'm sure you can come up here and help the tribes. So there was an organization that I had learned about when I was working in the governor's office. It does a lot of disaster relief for tribes. They did some great work down in southern Louisiana to help those tribes, especially the tribes that are not federally recognized. Federally recognized tribes have a relationship with the federal government, so they're able to access grants and resources through FEMA, through SBA, and other government agencies. State recognized tribes do not have that. They're not recognized by the federal government, but they may be recognized by the state. So they have less access to resources when disasters strike. So this organization called Partnership with Native Americans provided that assistance to those state recognized tribes that they would not get otherwise. So I was really impressed by their level of engagement and dedication and commitment to these tribes. And so I learned that they had an office in Rapid City, South Dakota. There was a position available that I applied for and was hired that day. And was with that organization for 10 years. They work with tribes mostly in the northern plains, so South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, and in the southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, and that region. And so I was hired to help launch a lot of their sustainable programs, so gardening projects, food sovereignty initiatives, emergency preparedness initiatives, leadership development, youth development. And so we were able to formulate a number of programs to serve these communities to help them be more sustainable, especially around food. And that's where my interest in food security really kind of launched. During that time working for Partnership with Native Americans, I was in the process of trying to develop a partnership with Feeding America. We worked with their disaster relief team who does a lot of support, and they were doing support for some of the tribes impacted by different storms. And so I came to Feeding America. I'm like, well, how does an organization like ourselves partner with Feeding America? Well, they're like, you know, you're not a food bank. You're not a legislator. You're not a donor. Mm-hmm. We're not sure what to do with you. I mean, we want to partner with you, but we don't know what to do with you. And so they said, give us some time to figure out how to do that. So in the meantime, someone from Feeding America reached out and said, Mark, you know, we are committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion. And we want to hire someone to work with our tribes, to support our food banks in their partnership with tribes. Would you help us create a job description for this position? And I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, I'd be honored to. So went through it and I was adding some things and changing things and, oh, this looks good. Next thing I know, I said, this is me. This job description is me. So I applied for it, and 3 years later, here I am in this position, and it's been the best experience I've ever had in my career. To me, it is like continuing ministry on a different level, supporting people's ability to be self-sufficient, to find confidence, and to find the resources they need to succeed.
So, Jerry, I'm going to say that he just one-upped you, which I don't think any guest has so far. I mean, he wrote his own job description and got the job.
Right.
So,
right,
you know,
right,
that's one you and I have never done.
No, that is the honest truth. That is the honest truth.
Well, we got to take a quick break here. We'll come back in just a minute. We want to talk with you, Mark, about what the work looks like here across our nation and even here in Michigan, if you have some particular examples. He's Mark Ford. That's Jerry Brisson. I'm Dr. Phil Knight. We're all three back with you in just a moment.
Contact the Food Bank Council of Michigan at fbcmich.org. Now back to more Food First Michigan with Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson.
Welcome back, everyone. Dr. Phil Knight, Jerry Brisson here. Our guest, Mark Ford, the Director of Native and Tribal Partnerships with Feeding America. Thanks for making the trip over, Mark. And Jerry, I know you can't wait to pick up on Mark's story and the questions that you have rolling around in your mind.
You know, the thing that came to my mind is something that often comes to my mind, and that is, you know, the less you know about a problem, the easier it is to solve. We've talked right. about this many times.
It's a
right?
mantra.
And so just hearing your story reminds me of, you know, there's so many stories. There's so many things that people have been through, and when you extend that out to the tribes and the tribal lands and the nations, and even that there's different nations and they have different access to resources. And then I know when you break that down into each area where people are living, even those situations are so radically different from each other. And so trying to pull it together into some kind of a cohesive, how do we manage this conversation? That's, of course, leading right into the whole landscape work. I mean, it has to be related, right? That once you start looking, it's like, oh my gosh, now there's this, now there's this. So I think we want to hear about that. I think we want to hear about, you know, well, what did you discover or are you discovering? And what does that lead to next?
Jerry, great question. And when I first came to Feeding America, a lot of food banks started contacting me because here's the first person in this position who is there to support Native and tribal communities and partnerships between our food banks and these communities. And so I was learning a lot of things from individual food banks. And as I began looking around Feeding America to see if we had more data, there were little bits and pieces here. I know there are things that our government relations teams were working on around supporting initiatives with USDA and other food programs for Native and tribal communities. There were grants that were given to our food bank that invested in buying culturally relevant foods to be able to distribute to communities. There were grants also in building equity and building those relationships with communities of color. And so I know those things were, but there were bits and pieces. And so we decided to do a landscape assessment to find out overall, what is Feeding America? What is the story about what are we doing to partner and to serve Native and tribal communities? So it was a year-long project of love. Labor and love. It wasn't just gathering data. It was learning, listening to people's stories, you know, listening to their experiences. What is the experience of when you are experiencing hunger or food insecurity? What is it like when you have to go to that food bank or to that pantry to get food? And then also asking the food banks, what's it like to work with Native and tribal communities? What's that experience like? What is different than working with other communities? So there was a lot of interviews, a lot of trust building that had to take place before those interviews could even happen.
Sure.
Because so many times there's good intentioned organizations that go into tribal communities. Oh, we're going to do focus groups. We're going to do surveys. And the people invest their time. They share from their hearts, their experiences. You never hear anything about it again. So we wanted to make sure that this was a dignified approach in the way that we gathered this story and this information. So we learned a lot. One of the things that we learned is that there are 84 food banks in our network who share geographic boundaries with tribes, which means that the service area of the food bank covers tribal lands. we learned that there are 48 tribes who are being served by multiple food banks. And to me, that was probably the biggest surprise. But not necessarily that those food banks are coordinating their services together to serve those that same tribe that they were partnering with. So that was something we learned, that we can build upon that. Mm-hmm. How can we help those food banks collaborate with each other to better provide services and partnerships with those tribes? We learned how many tribes there were. There's 574 federally recognized tribes, and there's 60 state recognized tribes, and there's over 200 what we call bands or groups of tribes. And these are sometimes groups that were federally recognized but no longer for whatever reason.
Right.
Maybe they're offshoots of tribes. So, you know, everyone knows the story about the Trail of Tears, the tribes in the East and the South being moved across the country through forced relocation into the Oklahoma Territory. Well, during that Trail of Tears, some people decided to run away and hide out in Louisiana or Mississippi or other states. And so they have maintained their culture and their traditions and their language, but they're not accepted either by the larger tribe that they came from, originated from, or by the federal government. Mm. So there's a lot of those groupings out there like that. So we learned these numbers as well in the landscape report. We learned what we're doing well, that there's some incredible initiatives that are taking place among our food banks and our tribes. I can share maybe examples later on, but there are some great initiatives. There are also some mistakes that we've made that we're learning from. You know, the commodity programs began when the government forced tribes into reservations, because the government told the tribes, you're no longer allowed to hunt and fish and forage. We're going to give you food. Now, controlling food is a great way of weaponizing that to dominate a group of people. And that's what our government did. They used food as a weapon. And so when tribes were forced into reservations, they were given commodities. They were given food, actually rations that the military didn't want. So stuff that was spoiled, stuff that was not healthy. The commodity program developed and it introduced foods to these communities that were never part of their ancestral diets. So things like wheat, things like processed sugars, dairy products, those didn't exist in this country. Now there were natural sugars through, you know, like maple syrup and honey and fruit, but not processed sugars or processed meats. Mm-hmm. And so these were introduced, which has caused so much health disparity with Native Americans to this day, and can continue to contribute to the highest rate of diabetes and heart problems and obesity and other issues that exist. And a lot of it had to do through the history of reservations being formed and controlling food. So we learned that there's still some approaches to food distribution that are antiquated. You know, a lot of our churches, which we're so grateful for, run food pantries and distribute food, even in tribal lands and tribal communities. But in some cases, there's this kind of saviorism approach. We're going to feed these poor Indians and help them out.
Right.
You know, rather than understanding what partnership is, it's about learning what the community, what's important to the community, what are their issues, what are things they want to work out and help sustain those projects, whether it's gardening projects or food processing projects or helping those tribes to be more sustainable. That's the way you partner, and not just by bringing food to those poor Indians.
So you know, I'm thinking, go ahead. Go ahead, Jerry.
You know, triggers,
too much,
right?
too much.
So one of the things, and I really appreciate how you're describing reality here, because, you know, people use words in equity work like sharing power. And if you don't have a context for that, it's hard to understand it. Right. It's not something that when you speak, it just makes total sense. Well, what does that really look like? And I really appreciate the way you talked about how introducing these foods into the culture created unintended consequences, right? Yeah. And those consequences could have been avoided if what? If there was a conversation about what's going to work for you and what's going to work best for you. And a lot of times sharing power looks like that.
Yes.
It's not like power from a military standpoint. It's power from a how do decisions get made to the best effect for everybody, right? So it's not scary. It's not scary. Sharing power doesn't mean giving up something you had to somebody else and now they have it and you don't.
Right.
It means everybody is a part of that process to create what everybody wants to see happen, right? And so I thought your description was a really good example of what does that really mean in equity work, and I appreciate that very much.
So I'm gonna force us to take a quick break here.
Sure.
And we're going to come back. And I want to ask you when you come back, Mark, about the term weaponization of food, which we have talked about this before, because there is one particular federal policy that we feel like we have an opportunity to change, and I want us to talk about that and let our listeners know about it, because we do have some wonky folks that like this show. So Jerry Brisson, Mark Ford, Dr. Phil Knight, we're all three going to be back right here. Don't you go away. You come back and be with us too.
Food First, Michigan. Once again, here's Phil and Jerry.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Jerry Brisson, Dr. Phil Knight here with our esteemed guest, Mark Ford, the Director of Native and Tribal Partnerships for Feeding America. We're hearing his story. We're hearing a little bit about the work. And Mark, I'm going to take us down a little road here about policy, because I think there's one that is harmful, talking about the weaponization of food in that context, that historically has been what any of us would think is unfair. Mm-hmm. So when you mentioned that the tribes began to receive commodities from the federal government, we have a lot of those programs out, and you know, God help us with the acronyms here. But so the Emergency Food Assistance Program, we call TFAP, is something that's available for anyone who, and we're a self-declaration state here in Michigan, by the way. So if you say you meet the criteria, we don't ask any further questions.
Right.
That program exists on the reservation. It's called something else. I'll let you talk about that in just a second. Mm-hmm. But downstate here, you can choose, you if you're eligible for one of these programs, you're also eligible for SNAP, which is the former food stamp program. Mm-hmm. But as I understand it, on the reservation, you're not eligible for both programs. You have to choose between one and the other, and that just seems grossly inappropriate, unfair, inequitable, and just dead wrong to me. Can you clarify that for me and what we're doing about it?
Yes, Dr. Phil, you're exactly right. So the food assistance program on Indian reservations is called FDIPR. That's the acronym. It stands for Food Distribution Program on Indian Reservations. Hmm. And as you mentioned, that people who live in tribal lands are only eligible for one or the other. And I'm not sure why that's in place, but I'm maybe sure why.
Yeah,
that's in place.
Right. Well, I think we mentioned it in the previous segment.
Yes.
You gave this presentation to the National Advisor Committee that I serve on for Feeding America, this came up, mm-hmm. and I didn't know if you know, I just wanted to save you, and I said let me answer it, and it was about control. That's the weaponization of food. And I think we're to a place now where when people hear this on this show, they are going to be extremely upset, and as they should be.
Yeah.
And so I know this is the situation. What are we doing about it?
And there are things being done. And so one of the great things about Feeding America is that we're learning to partner with other Native serving organizations. So my position when I first came to Feeding America has changed a little bit. I was part of the equity department when I first was brought on Feeding America. Now I'm part of the communications and community engagement. And I have two other colleagues who work with me in a team. One of them focuses on working in Black communities and one with Latino communities. And I work with the Native and tribal communities. And so part of our goal is to partner with other what we call grass top organizations from those communities and serving those communities. Because when we work with others, more can happen rather than just doing this by ourselves. So there's a group called the Native Farm Bill Coalition. It's a group of nonprofit organizations such as the Indigenous Food and Agricultural Initiative, the Intertribal Agricultural Council. The National Congress of American Indians is part of that, the Native American Agricultural Fund, and there's about 170 tribes who are part of this coalition.
Okay.
And this is their, what they're requesting in the Farm Bill. You know, every 5 years we have a Farm Bill that comes up.
We heard that.
Yes. And you probably heard from even one of my colleagues, Carrie, who's talked about the Farm Bill. So they include initiatives that what tribes are looking for that would better serve Native and tribal communities. So how, you know, supporting agricultural initiatives, farmers and rancher programs, access to more resources, being more food sovereign. And so one of the requests in there is to be able to have tribal lands receive both SNAP and FDIPR and to change it. And Feeding America fully supports everything that the Native Farm Bill Coalition has proposed in the Farm Bill.
Right.
So that's one way that we're pushing this forward.
And do we have a sponsor for that part? Do we have some people who are our own Senator Debbie Stabenow? We've talked with her about the inequity of this program, so to speak, in the historical. And I know that Senator Stabenow supports correcting this wrong.
Yes, I believe there's a number of legislators who support these measures, and so on both sides of the aisle.
Right, right.
So I know our government relations team is also working on that. So
good.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought that was a current, modern day example of maybe some historical leftovers from when the program started and what they were used for, as you talked about in the other segment. So I appreciate you taking a little time. Jerry, let me throw it over to you.
Yeah, I think one of the things that when we talk about government programs that help people, I always want to add to that conversation that we're not trying to paint a picture of needy people. We're trying to paint a picture of what it takes for communities to be successful. So you have fewer needy people, right?
Yes.
And that the people themselves are amazingly resilient, right? As I've personally traveled to different lands in my own life, and people would invite me to have food with them, right? Mm-hmm. And if there wasn't enough food, there was always food for me. Right.
Sure.
As a guest, I was treated with tremendous respect, and there was no question about the generosity and the intent of the people who I was visiting and talking with that maybe I knew and maybe I didn't. Right. And certainly want to paint that picture of strength and generosity and that people want programs to lead to greater independence and greater, you know, to build on the strengths that they have so that they can find more success in their communities according to their definition of success.
Exactly. You know, we forget that before colonization, that Native American communities were thriving economically and there was no experience of food insecurity.
Right.
Even during the wintertime, they knew, you know, our ancestors knew how to preserve food, to make things last through the wintertime. There's one nation I'm working with who's been teaching me a lot about the understanding of food and the importance of food. Because one of our food banks went to them and said, because they have a wonderful farm. In fact, they have the most advanced food sovereignty program than any other nation I know of. I call them nation and not tribe because they do not refer themselves to a tribe. They refer themselves as a nation.
Right.
And so the director of their food sovereignty program was approached by the food bank there and said, hey, if you grow more food, because they're growing traditional corn and other foods, we will pay you, you know, top dollar to buy it and then distribute it to other communities, native communities who need that or are asking for that. And they said no, because what we have figured out through our system of farming and through our relationship with food and growing crops is that one person can manage 1 acre of land of crops growing on that 1 acre. Because what is important is the quality of relationship that person has with those plants that are growing and producing food. So growing more beyond that, you lose that relationship. And so we are determined that as many people are working on our farm, that's how many acres we're going to grow. Even though there may be a greater need, we just have to learn that the quality of food is more important than the quantity. And in this country, we focus on mass production.
Yep.
And, you know, getting more food means more nutrition, but it really doesn't if there's no quality of relationship between that food product, whether it's an animal or a plant, then when you have a relationship with it.
So. That could be a whole show.
Right there.
I mean, right there. That's
He's coming back.
We're going to make that happen.
Mark Ford, the Director for Tribal, Native and Tribal Partnerships for Feeding America, thank you for making the trip. Thank you for being in our studio. Thank you for being our colleague. We'll stay in this together.
Awesome. Thank you.
Jerry and I are back in just a moment to wrap up this edition of Food First Michigan. Jerry, what's your take on this show?
You know, I'm just amazed at how much is happening all the time, right? Mark's story was an awesome story, but it's leading to deeper and broader understanding of the work and what it takes to be successful. And we know we have to be both more and better. It's not just about more. It was a great way to end the last segment to talk about more is an element. But more and better together is what makes programs successful and equity successful and diversity successful and inclusion successful. I mean, powerful show today.
Well, Jerry, time for a little food for thought. So here's the current saying that I like a lot. When you know better, do better. Mark Ford, the Director of Native and Tribal Partnerships at Feeding America, has helped define reality, and now we know better, and it's time for us to do better. We will do better when we put and keep food first, folks. Food first.
Food First Michigan, presented by Farm Bureau Insurance of Michigan and by the Food Bank Council of Michigan, creating a food secure state.